Hey guys, it's Allie. Welcome back to In for Life, the podcast. This is episode 351 called Kyla Burke. This episode is brought to you by Fertile. Hey friends, it's Allie. If you're in the middle of your what else can we try family building era, listen up. Fertile is the first and only sterile, FDA cleared at-home insemination kit designed for intracervical insemination, so sperm is placed right at the cervical opening. It's engineered to mimic the precision of an IUI, just 1 inch lower, but without washed sperm, meds, or appointments. Fertile is also triple patented, made in the US with IVF grade materials, and clinically validated. The kit comes with 3 sterile attempts, so you can cover your 3 most fertile days each cycle. It's as easy to use as a tampon, it ships discreetly, and it's HSA, FSA eligible. So who is Fertile for? Folks with unexplained infertility, LGBTQIA plus families, solo parents by choice, or anyone delaying IUI or IVF because of cost or burnout. If you want an option that's private, empowering, and science-backed, this is your sign. Okay, so here's what to do. Go to Fertile.com today and use code INFERTILEAF for $10 off. That's Fertile, pronounced fertile, but spelled with a PhD out of spite. They told Dr. Jen she wouldn't be a mother, and she used her PhD to prove them wrong. Again, that's PhertileAF.com and use code INFERTILEAF. Thanks, Fertile. This episode is brought to you by Therologics. If you've ever wondered what keeps your egg cells healthy and energized, here's a little science bomb for you. NAD+. It's a coenzyme in every single cell of your body, and your eggs need a lot of energy to mature properly. But here's the thing. NAD plus levels decline as we age, which can impact egg quality. That's why I'm so excited to tell you about OVA NAD plus by Therologics. The first NAD plus booster made specifically for ovarian health and egg quality. It combines nicotinamide riboside, a form of vitamin B your body can actually convert into NAD plus, with pterostilbene, an antioxidant from blueberries and grapes. Together, they support your egg cells' energy production, protect DNA, and help keep your reproductive health strong as the years go by. And like all Therologics products, OVA NAD Plus is independently tested, content certified, and has no hidden doses or proprietary blends. What's on the label is exactly what's in the bottle. Now here's the best part. You can save 15% right now at Therologics.com with code INFERTILEAF. Again, that's INFERTILEAF for 15% off at Therologics.com. And that's spelled TheraLogix.com. Thanks, Therologics. All right, guys, before we get started, I want to invite everybody to come to Fertility Rally Live number 10. Which is happening virtually on November 14th. This is our 10th time we've done this. It's an all-day event where we have speakers and giveaways, breakout sessions, and camaraderie. Everybody comes together on our event platform to listen to all these talks. And this time we have Sarah Herron, who you guys might know from Bachelor Nation, and also her infertility advocacy. She is our keynote speaker, but we also have a panel about surrogacy. We have a panel from REIs where you can ask them anything. And we have 8 amazing breakout sessions. So check it out. The tickets are available in the link in my bio on Instagram, which is at InfertileAF Stories. You can also find it on Instagram at Fertility Rally. Also, in honor of my 350th episode, which was last week, I'm doing a BOGO for my work of art books. So for $35, you can get 2 copies of work of art, 2 copies of Beautiful Bird, or 1 copy of each. And this is a limited time offer. You can get them on my website at infertilifegroup.com. And if you want to check out Fertility Rally, where we have virtual support groups, I just hosted one a few minutes ago every Wednesday night. We would love to have you no matter what you're going through. So check out fertilityrally.com, again on Instagram at Fertility Rally. If you want to check out one of our groups, happy to have you and see if you like it before you commit to anything. Just shoot me a DM. And you can see what the worst club with the best members is all about. All right, today I am talking with Kyla Burke, who you guys might know from her huge following on socials as a fitness expert and owner of the Coached by Kyla app. And Kyla is so incredibly cool and great to talk to. And she's going to get into her whole infertility story today, including being diagnosed with premature ovarian failure in her early 30s, pivoting to not just IVF, but also donor eggs, and now today being the proud donor egg mama of two babies. So we're going to hear all about it with her trademark honesty and humor. And oh my God, wait until you guys hear how she met her husband. It's quite possibly the best meet cute we've ever had on the show. So without further ado, this is Kyla on InfertilAF. Hi, Kyla. I'm so happy to talk to you. Thanks for doing this.
Hi, I am so excited to be here. This is like a bucket list thing for me.
What? Really?
Yeah, because every day that I would walk and I put my headphones in, and when I was going through like all my infertility stuff, I would just listen to podcasts of people that were going through the same thing. Aww. And this was one of the podcasts that I listened to on my walks. And I was like, when I'm like going, not near the end of my journey, but at some point I was like, I want to be on and tell my story.
Oh my God. I had no idea. Cause I reached out to you.
Yeah.
As soon as you manifested it.
Yeah. As soon as you started following me, and then I was like, wait, and then I'm like this part, putting it all together. I'm like, oh my God,
that's so cool. I'm so glad it helped you.
Yeah.
Well, we will continue on with your story that will help other people. So let's start out with, we were just talking about Nashville before we started recording because we just had our rally IRL there and that's where you are. Tell me how you met your husband.
Okay. So yeah, we are in Nashville and I'm actually originally from Canada. And I was on a girls trip back in 2020, right before COVID. So like February of 2020.
Oh, and wow. Right before.
Yeah. We were on a little girls trip. I met a bunch of girls in Bali and we decided to like go and meet up in Nashville to like see each other all over again. And we were walking down Broadway one day. It was like a daytime. We weren't doing anything crazy. And we walked in. Actually, we were walking past a bar and I heard like my favorite song at the like this Thomas Rhett song. You know, do you know Die a Happy Man?
Love. No, I don't. But I'm going to listen to it as soon as we end.
One of my favorites. And I heard it coming from a bar and we kind of walked past and I was like, let's just go in because we didn't have any plans. I'm like, let's just go in. And we walked in and my now husband is the one that was singing.
I just got the chills.
And
get out.
Yeah. We sat down for a couple hours and just sat there and listened to him. It was really quiet because it was like a daytime. It was like, I don't even remember, but it was daytime. There wasn't very many people in there. Mm-hmm. And we started talking to him. I think we started following him on social media and found out where he was playing the next day. And we went to see him play. And after that, we hung out and I was supposed to go home the next day. And I actually ended up extending my trip.
This is the best meet cute I've ever heard. Yeah. Oh my God. You stayed to hang out with him more?
I stayed, hung out with him more. And
I love this.
Going back even crazier. Actually, I'll tell you. Then, so I stayed, we hung out a couple more days and I went home. And then that was like February 1st weekend, 2nd. And then that's when like COVID started. And
so you went back to Canada.
I went back to Canada. And then I was able to go back and visit him one more time the next month in March. And it was the weekend that everything shut down. So they closed the borders as soon as I was flying home. And I was like, what is going to happen? Like, this is crazy.
Oh my gosh. So you did get back into Canada?
Yeah, I went home. And then, but the crazier part is that my massage therapist that I was working with at the time, she'd been to Nashville a couple weeks before I was going. And I was like, you know, she's massaging me. And I'm like, you know, what did you do while you were there? Because I hadn't been in forever. And she's telling me, and she's like, we saw this really, really great musician. We actually went back and saw him again a couple nights. This is his name. And I'm like getting a massage and I'm like not listening to anything. Mm-hmm. So I'm, you know, it was my husband.
Yes. Oh my gosh. Okay.
So they had actually seen him like 2 weeks before I met him. And they were like, he's so good. She told me his name's Mark Burke. And I'm like, okay, like not really thinking anything of it. That's who we ended up seeing that's who I ended
okay,
up.
This is the universe, like, yes, intervening, pointing you in that direction. This is so great.
Yeah. And we walked in and that was him. And I didn't put too much, I didn't even realize until I actually had to call her to reschedule a massage because I stayed later than I was supposed to. And I had to call her and I was like, hey, I got to reschedule. She's like, did you meet somebody? And then I told her, and then she asked, like, was asking me questions. She's like, that's who I told you about before you went to Nashville.
Holy shit. This is wild. Okay.
And you know how many, like, you were just there. You know how many musicians.
Oh my God. Yeah. Thousands.
Like, everyone is a musician.
Right.
So that's how we
met. That's so cool. So what was it about him, aside from his obvious talent and singing your favorite song? What was it about him that made you think, like, this is the guy? Like, I want to extend the trip.
He was just such a gentleman. He's originally from Florida. He's just such a gentleman. I wasn't used to that. I feel like when you grow up in different places, like, everyone is kind of raised differently. And I just hadn't met somebody that was respectful and a gentleman. And I just remember I texted one of my friends and she was asking how the trip was. And I was like, I think I met my husband, like, as a joke. And
Oh my God. So what happened during COVID? Were you guys able to, how did you keep in touch? How did you keep it going?
I went back, and that was March, the last time I saw him. And then things got crazy, as we all know. And apparently the border was technically shut down, but I was kind of talking to somebody that was dating somebody, like a friend that was dating somebody in the US as well. And she kind of told me how she got across. And she's like, I got to go visit, you know, my boyfriend. I just said he was, like, my spouse, and they didn't really ask any questions. So I was like, you know what? I was like, what do I have to lose? Because when you go to the border in Toronto, or when you go to the airport in Toronto, you go through customs first. So if they're going to deny you, you're in Canada. So I was like, you know what? I'm just going to try. I'm going to go for a weekend. I'm going to see if they let me in. I went to the airport and it was just so eerie. There was nobody traveling.
Right.
It was just, you know, there was people in, like, hazmat suits. It was just crazy.
Oh my God. It was such a dark time.
Yes. I tried in July. So we went from March to July and they let me through. And I was like, okay. So I went for a weekend. I left my dog at home because I'd just gotten a puppy. And I was like, okay. So I went for a weekend and then I flew back, and you had to quarantine for, like, 14 days after when you got back to Canada. So I did the whole quarantine thing. And then I think it was, like, day 16 or something. I'm like, I'm going to go back for a month. I'm going to pack up my dog and I'm going to go for a month and see, like, what happens. So I packed up my dog. They let me through again. So I was like, okay. And so I stayed for a month, and then I went back home and I had to quarantine for 14 days again. On day 15, I was going to go back again for a few weeks. And so I packed my dog up and flew there. And that was in September of 2020. And I never left.
Oh my God. How cool. This is, like, love meant to be.
Yeah. It was September of 2020.
You're lying to the border agents to see this man.
Like, let me through. Yeah.
Don't come at her now, border people.
Exactly. They let me in. So I was like, hey, I'm going to go. And so that was September of 2020. And we got married in January. We got married because we started to talk to a lawyer because we're like, we know that this, like, we just knew. And I was like, we might as well just start now. So we talked to a lawyer.
I love this.
And he was like, the best thing to do right now, especially during COVID, is get married, because then you don't have to leave the country. Because if I did it these other ways, I would have had to leave, all that.
Right.
So we got married, started the process. And that was in, by that time, it was like April of 2021. And I got a green card. Like, we got married. It took a year for me to get my green card.
Uh-huh.
And I actually just got citizenship last month. So it took a total of basically 5 years, 4 years from when we started the process. So I'm now fully an American citizen. And yeah, it was.
Wow. That's the best story ever. Yeah. So when did you guys start talking about, you know, your family and, like, the future and what you wanted that to look like? And were you guys on the same page about all of that?
Yeah. So we met 2020, and then in 2021, or sorry, end of 2020, I actually got COVID in November of 2020. And that's actually when all of this started. And again, I don't know the reason behind everything. I don't have answers, but obviously I tell my story a little bit more, but November of 2020, I had it at the beginning, and I never got a cycle after that. I had my very last period end of October of 2020, and it was completely normal. I always had a normal cycle, never had issues. And then I got COVID. Mm-hmm. And during COVID, I started to get hot flashes. And I thought it was COVID. I thought it was COVID. So I was like, okay. And I'm like trying to Google it, but it was still so new. And I was like, and I wasn't really seeing hot flashes as one of the symptoms yet. But again, no one really knew, right? So I started getting these crazy hot flashes. And then after COVID went away, I kind of tapered out and nothing really happened. And then like, I think it was July of the next year, I started getting hot flashes again. I'm like, do I have COVID again? Like, this is what happened last time. This is so weird. And I didn't have COVID. So I was like, okay, so this is odd. But again, November, I never got another cycle. I just never got another period again.
Wow.
Yeah. And I went
that
to
is
my
wild.
OB. Yeah. I went to my OB because.
Did you think you were pregnant?
No. I mean, I think I tested, but nothing was coming back. At this time I was trying to test ovulation because we were getting like formally married, like big ceremony in November of 2021. So I was like, let's wait till after that. That's when we were planning. But I started going to my doctor in July before we got married to be like, okay, our plan is in November, you know.
Right.
But I told her, I was like, I haven't had a cycle since last November. And she was like, you know, it's probably just the stress between wedding, citizenship, all that kind of stuff. So she
big life changes. Yeah.
She's like, it's probably stress. So I started to see an acupuncturist and nothing was getting it going, that kind of thing. So then, yeah, we got married. And so I was like kind of leading up, I was kind of tracking ovulation, but I didn't have anything to track because I didn't have a cycle. So it was just one day it would be peak. The next day it was just very frustrating.
Okay. You were just using like an at-home tracker or something?
Yes.
Or an app?
I didn't have a cycle. So it was like, I would just randomly be testing.
Right.
So this entire time I'm like, oh, it's stress. It's all these things. And we got married in November. And then that's when I was like, okay, we need to figure out what's going on because I was told everything looked fine in July. We're now married in November of 2021. Obviously, I still don't have a cycle. Like, this is not normal.
Mm-hmm.
So actually, instead of going back to my doctor, I hired a like hormone, like nutritionist. And I was like, maybe hormones are just out of whack and I just need to get them fixed kind of thing.
Right.
So I hired her and she actually was the one that ordered like all my blood work panel. Like I did a Dutch test, all of that.
Uh-huh.
And it started to slowly come in. And I remember her just saying, hey, I need you to go to like an any lab and get an AMH test done for me.
Yeah.
And so I got that done for her.
Did you know what that was?
No idea.
Because I'd never heard of that until I got into this world. Yeah.
Never knew what it was.
Right.
And I remember getting the results back like a day later and I didn't have a meeting with her, like, cause we were doing it all like online. I didn't have like a video call with her for like a week, but I ended up Googling it after I had it done. And then I got my results and it was like less than 0.01. And I was like, then I'm looking at all, I'm like, wait, what? I'm like, I've never even heard of this before. I don't know what's going on. I don't have a cycle. I'm having hot flashes. Cause at this point we got married in November. My hot flashes started in December and never went anywhere. They just stayed. And I was like, okay, well, this isn't COVID. Cause originally when it started, I was like, this is something else.
So were you thinking it was like menopause or something?
Yeah,
I mean, it's obviously cycle related, hormone related. Yeah,
exactly. So I Googled all of the symptoms that I was having and it was like coming up with menopause. And I was like, what? Like never knew this was, could be a thing, anything. So I finally had a meeting with this hormone nutritionist and she was basically like, I think you need to go to a fertility clinic. Like, because she's giving me all these results and all of my levels, my estrogen, my LH, everything was in postmenopausal range. Like I had already basically been through it and there wasn't anything. And I'm like, and
that's
she can't,
so wild.
Yeah, she can't diagnose me. So she was like, this is the results I'm getting from all your blood panel. I need you to take it to the fertility clinic and get diagnosed from there.
Mm-hmm.
And so
that must have been scary too. Like, you're like, what is going on?
Yeah. And I mentioned I was 34 at the time.
Okay.
So I'd had normal cycles all the way up until I think my period was gone at 33. And then by the time I was actually diagnosed, I was 34. And I'm one of those people when I like find something, like I just get it done. I don't wait. I'm like, okay, well, let's just get in with a fertility. Like, let's speak to someone. And so I made two appointments with two separate fertility clinics here in Nashville and had one appointment over Zoom. That was okay. And then I went in and saw the clinic that we ended up going with. And I think I'd already prepared myself because I knew I'm looking at the symptoms, I'm looking at what's going on, I'm looking at my AMH, and I'm like, okay, well, this is definitely primary ovarian insufficiency, like, mm-hmm. or premature ovarian failure. I was like, mm-hmm. it's just, I had every symptom from mm-hmm. hot flashes to like the muscle, like the aching, low libido, like mm-hmm. my skin had just like, I feel like I'd aged in like 10 years within a couple months. Like, that's just mm-hmm. how I felt. Mm-hmm. So I'd already kind of prepared myself before going into these. And it's funny because my appointment wasn't until March and we had had dinner with a friend of ours and her husband for his birthday. And I'm telling her all this because I'm just finding all of this out. And we're having a couple glasses of wine and they have four kids and they both are done. Like, she has her tubes tied and she's like, well, if you end up needing a donor, I'll donate for you. Like, I am very fertile. Like, she's like got pregnant, you know, right away on with all her babies, you know, mm-hmm. she twins. Like, she's like, I will donate for you if you need that. And at this point, I'm still not diagnosed, but it's coming up, the appointment. And
right.
we kind of left that because we had talked about it before. My husband wasn't sure about donor eggs because he's like, I don't know, like, It seems, you know, you just get this information and what do you do with it? You know, how do I find a donor? How does this work?
Right. It's overwhelming. And also like, you don't think your story is going to go that way. So it's exactly. like, wait, what? Why am I even in this situation? This exactly. doesn't happen to me. This happens to other people.
Exactly. Like, we didn't think about, I'm 34 years old and didn't know anything about donor eggs. I didn't even know anything about IVF because I didn't know anyone that had gone through it. Like,
okay.
Uh-huh. Everyone I'm friends with has gotten pregnant naturally, has had mm-hmm. these, you know, easy pregnancies. So we left that night and we were kind of both like, if we find out at our appointment that we need to go the donor egg route, you know, this feels a little bit better for, like, this just felt, I think, because we were like, we know her family, we know mm-hmm. her background. And oddly enough, we look so much alike. Like, when people see us, they're like, are you guys sisters? Like,
yeah,
everything just kind of fell. And we were like, okay.
Again, the universe is just
exactly. Yeah. That's how I'm feeling about it. And I was like, okay, I think if we have to go this route, I just feel better about this if mm-hmm. we have her donate. And, you know, again, haven't been diagnosed. So mm-hmm. Less than a month later, we have our first appointment at our fertility clinic and they, you know, do the blood work and ultrasound. And right off the bat, he's just like, you don't have any eggs. I can barely see your ovaries.
Wow.
There's nothing. You have no function.
Yeah.
And this crazy part is like, at what point, like, they can't tell you at what point this happened because I had normal cycles up until 2020. And at this point, it's the beginning of 2022. So I don't know at what point.
Right. It's like, you almost want to sit like, is there any way they could retroactively figure out, like, was it COVID?
Yeah.
Was that like what happened? Like, you got sick?
Exactly. And then again, I had my genetic testing done. And if anyone that has POI, a lot of genetic disorder, well, the Turner syndrome and Fragile X. So,
okay.
Those are the two genetic that they check for when you get diagnosed with POI because they're linked. Okay. And I did not have any of the genetic disorders. So it's one of those things where I'm glad I was diagnosed, but at the same time, it's where did it come from? You know,
absolutely. And not have answers is just frustrating.
Yeah. So my thought is it autoimmune and I got COVID and it just sparked something and that's when it happened. And I'm a part of a lot of like Facebook groups that are POI related and it's people are really starting to talk about it now. They're talking about yeah, they're talking about how they were diagnosed after either COVID or whether it was the vaccine. They don't know. Mm. And again, nobody knows anything.
Had you had the vaccine at any point?
No, because of COVID and losing my cycle, when the vaccine came out, I was like, I want to start a family. Like I can't now go and do this. And I was hearing all those stories about people losing their period after the vaccine. So I was like, I feel like I've already, you know, lost it. How do I go and get the vaccine and then hope that, you know, it sparks something? Like, it could have just made it worse. I don't know.
I get it. Let me ask you this. How did you feel? Like, obviously you were doing research and preparing yourself that this might be the diagnosis, but like, as a woman and mentally, like, how did it make you feel that you got those results?
The only time that I broke down was getting the AMH levels. That's when I think it hit me. And I wasn't even diagnosed yet. It was when I saw those AMH levels and I was just like, I have no eggs left. Like, it's just such a bizarre feeling that it's just like, okay, so now what? Like, you just not ever have kids or...
Right.
And especially when you don't know anything about IVF, donor, adoption, they're not on your radar until... You're either in that position or you know somebody that has been through it.
100%. Yeah.
I started therapy after that. So I actually found a reproductive therapist. And whenever people come to me that have been diagnosed with POI because they see my story, that is the one thing that I cannot like tell them. Like if it's in your budget and you can afford it or your insurance covers it, speak to somebody because... Mm-hmm. No one else around me understood because they hadn't been through it. But I saw a therapist for many, many months. We talked. I think we talked up until after my first transfer. And then I think after that, I just kind of felt like I was at ease at that point that I was, you know, happy with everything. So I was like, I think I can like taper out. I think I've gone through all the steps that I needed to go through, you know, grief of, you know, not having that that image of what you think your life is going to be like.
Absolutely.
So that is the one thing. A reproductive and especially a reproductive therapist that specializes in infertility and.
Right. Absolutely. So tell me what happened next. So you get this diagnosis and then what did you guys do?
So originally the first clinic that we spoke to the day before the one we went with, they had told us, here's the egg banks. This is what you need to do. You need to go online. You need to look at all these profiles. And I asked them at the end of the appointment, I said, if we know somebody that is willing to donate for us, what is that process? And they basically told me it's an extra 6 months on top of what you wanted, like how long IVF will take. And
what? Why?
Something about quarantining eggs. And I'm like sitting there because, like I said, I had done so much research up until these appointments because I knew going into them, if they're going to tell me that I need to go the donor egg route or, you know, adoption or what it is, I wanted to have all that information where I could ask questions. And so as soon as she said that, it was the very end of our appointment. And I was like, I got off the call and I was like, that doesn't make sense to me because I've done research and then looking back at it, you know, they want you to go through an egg bank because they make more money off of.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Because, you know, you're paying an extra $10,000-$15,000 for donor eggs.
Right.
So looking back at it, I was like, oh, okay. They sent me straight away to like donor banks. And again, I looked at them because at this point our friend had offered, but I now have to go to her and be like, hey, I know you offered, but did you actually mean
it? Right, exactly. That's like the most awkward conversation ever. Yes. You're like, here, have a few glasses of wine first.
Exactly. And she was phenomenal. Like I said, she'd even before my first appointment, she messaged me and she was like, you just let me know. Like she's so fantastic. And so.
Wow, what a wonderful person. Oh, yeah.
When I tell you like the most selfless human ever, it's just, anyone that donates is amazing. And
yeah.
Especially donates, like nothing in return, you know, incredible. So we had our appointment and we had to go that route with donor eggs.
Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.5 billion back to our customer owners over the last 9 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.
And I was like, okay, I've already mentally prepared myself for this. I didn't walk in, not knowing what was going to happen. So I remember I texted her the next day and I was like, hey, do you want to grab coffee? And she was like, do you need my eggs? And my husband happened to be playing down on Broadway that day. So she's like, let's go down. And she knew people that were in town. So she's like, let's go down to Broadway. And, you know, so she picked me up. We only lived like 5 minutes from each other at the time. And she knew right away. She was just like, yes, I will donate for you. And, wow, you know, whatever you need me to do, you just let me know. And I'm thinking, like, this person who has 4 children at home, you know, she's a stay-at-home mom. I'm like, the fact that you are just, you know, willing to do this for, and again, at this point, our husbands were good friends. And then we met through our husbands. And at this point, she's only known me for like a year. And it was just one of those things where it's, I just like couldn't believe that.
Right. It all fell into place.
Yes. And
okay. Just, so what are the next steps for that?
So that was in March of 2022. And she had an appointment the next month. Like when I say I was on top of things, because
you are on it.
You know, anything about fertility clinics, it could take months to years to get anything done at fertility clinics. And so I was just like on top of them, like, hey, let's get in there, because she needed to do her blood work, her AMH, you know, all that kind of stuff. And so she went in, had her appointment. I went with her and everything went great. Everything lined up with genetic testing. We really had no hiccups. And I know that's unusual, because I feel like there's always like something, you know, blocking something from happening in cycles. And we really had no hiccups. And she had her first appointment in April, and she was actually supposed to have a retrieval in May for us. But something came up with her cycle. I think that was the only thing. So she ended up having it in June, 2 months later. And we got 8 eggs from her, which the doctor was very surprised that we only got 8, because she's so fertile. But she's 3 years younger than me, I think. 3 years younger. And they got 8 eggs. And at this, I was happy. I mean, I've never gone through IVF. So I was like, 8 eggs is
great. Yeah.
And we were
we're going to have 8 kids then.
Yeah, right. we were there with her. You know, I went with her. My husband and I went with her and took her and brought her home. And from there, we ended up with 5 embryos out of the 8 eggs that we got, which is incredible. And, you know,
that is incredible.
Yeah, they tell you, you know, if you get 8, you'll probably end up with 4 by this time. And, you know, and we got very lucky with 5. And we actually decided not to test our embryos. We decided to just leave it and go that route. And I think we got a little bit of pushback from our clinic on that. But at the same time, they were okay with it, because she was not somebody going through infertility and had never dealt with miscarriages. And at that point, clearly had pretty good egg quality. And there was nothing, no issues on my husband's side. So he was like, he didn't really care that much. But at the same time, you know, they try and get you to, but it was expensive. Like at this time, we're paying for all of her meds, everything out of pocket. We don't have insurance to cover everything. So it was like another $7,000 to test them. And my husband and I were like, should we just not test them?
I get it. Like, yeah.
I was like, we didn't want to know the genders anyways. So I was like, let's just, at this point, I've put so much into science and these doctors. I was like, let's leave something up to, you know, God and what's supposed to happen. And
sure,
if they implant, they implant. And if they don't, they don't. So,
yep, I totally understand. Yep.
Yeah. We just decided not to test them. And we ended up with, our clinic for some reason does, they're grading a little bit different. I think they don't do like the,
There's not like a standard grading across all the clinics. So it's, they're all kind of slightly different.
Exactly. And I always see like AB, I don't know what any of that, because ours just does excellent, good, fair, and poor.
Okay.
So we ended up with 5 embryos. We had a good, fair embryo, which was our best. And then we had 4 fair fairs. And they were okay with that. Anything less, like that's poor, they obviously don't encourage to transfer it. But so this was in June and we transferred in July the next time, because I don't have a cycle. So that was like the only really like good thing about my no cycle.
So timing wise, you didn't have to like time it to you. Okay. No.
We just started rolling into things, you know. I was already on hormone replacement.
And you like to get shit done quick. Exactly. So you're like
our clinic, when I tell you, like our clinic hated us, I think, because our donor was kind of the same way. She was like, I have to have a retrieval in June because my kids are gone, blah, blah, blah. Like we had these things where we're like, we need this, this, and this done. And they were just kind of like, okay, like, I mean, we're paying for it. So I was like,
right,
yeah, let's just do it. Like at this point. And there's like 4 offices around Nashville with them. So I'm like, I'll go this way. I was like, I don't care what office is that. We're getting that. So I'd end up like all over Nashville in different areas just to get these tests done. And I think we annoyed them, but at the same time we got it done and everything went beautifully. And it's maybe sounds, I think I was just so naive to, I didn't know anything about IVF. So I didn't know all of the things that could happen.
Same.
I didn't know that cycles could get canceled because your lining's not thick enough. I never worried about them and it never happened. So after I was kind of like, was that very naive of me to not think that nothing bad was going to go, or did it actually benefit me? Because
it's so funny. We were talking about that on our rally support group call the other night, because it's like everyone immersed in this world now. And a lot of the members in our community they know so much. And there's like, with that knowledge comes like power and you can advocate, but it's also kind of scary because you're like, you do know all the things that can go wrong. So we were like, which is better, like the ignorance is bliss or the knowing too much? And I was like you, I did enough research, but I didn't know, you know, now I know, having been in this world for so many years and talking to thousands of people. But like, same with me when I went in for my IVF, you know, all that stuff and the transfer, and my one embryo did work. I knew I was lucky, but I didn't know how lucky that was.
Exactly. And I was like, maybe that was like a good thing. But also like, then I feel bad because I listened to all these other stories and
I know,
and it breaks my heart. Cause I'm like, was I being ignorant not to like realize that all of these things could go wrong?
Yeah. But I don't think it's ignorant. I think it's like you said, you just don't know what you don't know. Yeah. And sometimes it's better. I don't know. It's, you can argue both ways, right?
Yeah. And I like to think I have a pretty positive outlook on everything. And I think that's also why I've shared so much on social media, because like not a lot of people share about, you know, having to go the donor route, because there's sometimes a little bit of shame to it. And I was like, you know what? I was like, I'm going to take what I'm going through, especially because I already had a following before my infertility because of fitness. I was like, okay, let me start talking about it and maybe I'll resonate with somebody. And I couldn't believe the amount of messages I was getting from women that were going through the same thing that I was. And I was like, I've never even heard of POI before. Like, where, this is crazy. So we transferred in July of 2021 and she stuck and we were pregnant and it was so surreal. Like it was crazy. It was amazing. Especially because we had gone through a few hiccups with the clinic itself. Just, you know how fertility clinics can be sometimes. It's sometimes cold. Like for the job and the career that they have, you look at everyone in that waiting room and you know every single person in that fertility clinic wants a family so bad, or they're struggling. And there's sometimes this sense of like coldness and it's all about money sometimes. And I felt that a few times with our appointments. And
I get it.
I remember before my transfer, the nurse said to me, your doctor is actually not going to be doing your transfer. He's out of town. And she's trying to justify it to me. Like, he deserves this. I guess he was like the head doctor. And I just remember feeling like a sense of like, thank gosh. Cause I don't know what it was about him. He didn't give me like the warm, not that I need warm fuzzies, but he just didn't.
There's bedside manner. Yeah.
There were a few things that he said to my donor about like, she really wanted me to be at the egg retrieval, and I happened to be in LA for work, and he wanted to do it, and I was going to be back the next day. And she's like, can we just wait one more day? And he's like, well, is her husband home? And she said, yeah. He's like, well, we only need him anyways. And it was like,
cold. Yeah.
It was just like one thing after another. I was just like, ooh, he just really.
Yeah. So when
she said that he wasn't going to be in town, I was like, oh, thank gosh. Mm-hmm. And I ended up having this amazing doctor do the transfer. He was so kind and so sweet. And yeah, so I found it actually 4 days after our transfer.
Okay. So did you early test?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
I couldn't. There's no way.
See, I waited because I was so nervous that I was going to get like a false positive or a false negative. So I just waited.
Yeah.
But I get it.
I didn't have to do any of like the trigger or anything like that. So I knew that I was like, I think I started testing at like 3 days because I also had a friend that was going
like 20 minutes later, you know, like, yeah, exactly. The way home.
Yeah. And we went in, did our blood work 10 days later, and she called and she said, your level's 908. And I was like,
what?
Oh my gosh. I was like, and we were both like, okay.
Twins?
Twins. We only implanted one, but our donor does have twins. And I was like, oh my gosh. Like, okay. And then I think at that point, you go through this process, like not thinking about the future and like, okay, we want to get as many eggs as possible. We want to get as many embryos as possible. We want to like to have all the chances. And then we don't care if it's twins. And then the moment that you're like, maybe it's twins, I'm like, oh my God. I'm like,
what did we do?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ended up coming back that it was just one singular, very, very strong pregnancy.
Aww.
And we have a beautiful daughter. She just turned 2.5.
Yes.
And just absolutely, she's amazing. And I think it took me about a year after having her. As you mentioned, let's go back a little bit. I had her, and then at 7 months postpartum, my symptoms came back for my POI.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I remember I think I was flying to Canada and I started to get a hot flash and I was like, oh no. I have her. I think I was flying alone with her and I was like, oh my gosh, this is not happening. I'm breastfeeding.
Yes.
I had the most amazing pregnancy. I had no morning sickness. I had just.
Did you get your cycle back afterwards? Like after the pregnancy?
I got a cycle back after I stopped breastfeeding and it was just one cycle. And I remember being like, oh,
I'm back.
I called my clinic and I was like, can I get in to get like an ultrasound done? And I think I was just, nothing changed and I still had no eggs, but there was that like sense of like going through the whole pregnancy. I was like, what if I'm just that unicorn that gets pregnant and then everything goes back to normal after I have a baby? That's
right.
That's what I thought. I was like, maybe that will happen to us. But I had a beautiful pregnancy. I had no complications. It was genuinely just after everything that we had gone through, it was just really nice to be able to actually like enjoy pregnancy after all those shocks, after all those, everything that had happened.
Yes. Yes.
And
that's great.
Yeah, it was fantastic. But I got my symptoms came back at 7 months postpartum and I went to my fertility clinic and I said, like, what are my options? And she said, well, you're still breastfeeding. So we can try and put you back on hormone replacement, but it could affect your supply. And I was like, okay, let's try it. After a day of taking estrogen, my supply dropped. And I was like, okay, it's more important for me to breastfeed. I'll just deal with the symptoms. And so I dealt with them for a few more months. And then my daughter ended up weaning off at about 10.5 months anyways. Mm-hmm. And I do think that little drop for a few days, I had a hard time getting back. And I think that that's when she kind of just, stopped. So yeah. I definitely think that that affected my supply. And I know it doesn't affect everyone because I have other mom friends that have gone through it and they went back on estrogen and they were totally fine breastfeeding. But then I started back on hormone replacement. And again, it just helps. So, oh my gosh, so much with those crazy
symptoms.
It's just.
And then were you guys, in terms of family building, were you and your husband like, we're not done? You know, we've got Baylor. That's your daughter, right?
Yes, daughter. Yeah, Baylor.
So we've got Baylor, but we're not done. Like, when did you guys start for like the sibling cycle, as they call it?
Yeah, I'd always kind of thought too. I was like, okay, I will be happy. Like, I would love to, but again, this is all like, who knows what's going to happen with transfers. And it took me until she was one to be like, okay, I'm ready. Because I was just in this like bliss of like, oh my gosh, like how can I love somebody else more than I love her? I was like, how can I have another child? Like, I'm obsessed with her. And I was like, I'm not ready. And then she turned one and I was like, okay, it was just before her first birthday. I was like, let's at least get in with the fertility clinic and start talking about it. And so we got in, we did, you know, the normal testing that they do. And I really loved being pregnant at the time that I was pregnant. So we got pregnant in July, transferred in July, and I had her in April. So I kind of had already known that the only perk I think of IVF is kind of getting to decide when you have your baby, if it's successful. So I was like, okay, I would love to do like another spring baby. I think it was really good for like mental health, being able to get out of the house after I had her, be able to go on walks. Like the weather was beautiful. It wasn't cold. So I was like, if I can control anything.
Right. Because fitness is like your life, right? I mean, yes. Obviously that's your thing.
I can control like what month we try and get pregnant. So
right.
we actually had planned to kind of do it the exact same time. We were going to try and transfer in July, and something, I don't remember why, but it was a little bit later. And with their scheduling, we ended up scheduling a transfer for August. So, which I was so okay with.
You're using the embryos that were banked. You didn't create more.
We still had four more embryos, and they were all fair embryos. So they're all tested the same. Again, we don't know the gender, and I don't know how it worked at that point. I'm like, I guess they kind of pick one, because we picked the first one right. The best quality, right? And so, yeah, we did all the testing. Everything looked fantastic. They did say something about polyps on my uterus before my transfer. And she was kind of, it's funny to look back, but she was kind of like, that could affect your transfer, but I'm not really concerned about it. And then I remember I like went into deep dive on like polyps and how they can affect your transfer. And I was like, well, does this make sense for us to transfer an embryo with them? But again, they never said anything. So I was like, all right, let's go.
Right. Like, I feel like sometimes when you look online, you can kind of find whatever you're wanting to find. Like if you were like, this is not a good thing, you can find all the evidence to support that. But also the flip side, right?
Exactly. And I was like, okay, I guess we're going to go through with it. But again, I just didn't know anything because we had such a fantastic transfer the first time. So it took me about a year, and then we decided to transfer in August. So my daughter was just over a year, and we transferred middle of August, and 5 days post-transfer. I started testing 4 days because she was 4 days and I was getting a negative on day four. And I'm like, this didn't work. I'm like, you know, when you just, because it happened the first time early and.
Yes. That heart's sinking.
Yes. Yes. And my husband's like, it's okay. It's still early. And I'm like, I know it's still early, but you constantly think about the first time. And I was like, okay. And so I waited a little bit, but day five, we did get another positive. And I was just like, I was still in shock, because I'm like, what are the odds that, you know, we do these two transfers of untested embryos and, you know, they're both positive. And I always like to mention, especially when people that are even just going through IVF with their own embryos or own eggs, that their donor eggs do have a higher success statistic, because you're taking a really, really good quality egg from somebody that doesn't have infertility issues and a really, really good quality sperm, and you're putting them together. Whereas most people that are going through IVF have some kind of, you know, low quality egg or low mobility. So I always remind people, and they're like, I can't believe, you know, you had these two successful transfers right off the bat. Like,
right. It's so funny. I've never heard it described that way, but I totally understand what you're saying. Like,
You're taking two people that have perfect fertility and putting and making an embryo. So the chances they told us were 60% would be the
pretty 60. Good odds. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, yes, we got pregnant again, and we found out I was a little boy this time. And again, I had a beautiful pregnancy. We had a few like little issues that came up with like care, and everything was they'd have an ultrasound and they'd be like, I remember my OB that I was with at first, she was like, something's coming back, because we didn't test them genetically. And she's like, this is coming back. Like, it might be, I forget what genetic thing. And everything came back clear. Everything that like a little hiccup we had, they're like, that was just this or that. So it was I wasn't used to, because we had such a easy
right.
pregnancy.
All those little scares along the way. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, those anatomy scan things where they're like, oh yeah, this. And I never had that before. So I'm like, oh my gosh.
Like, right. They're like holding the ultrasound like too long in one spot and taking like click, 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 click. You're like, what are you looking at? What is that? Yes. What is that? Yeah.
Yeah. I had to go back in after sitting in my OB and like, we need to get a few more pictures. And I was like, oh, at this point, I'm like, great. Like something's going on.
Right.
But I had a beautiful pregnancy with my first, I had a C-section. Just she couldn't fit through. It just, I tried for 36 hours. I pushed for 4 hours.
Wow.
And she just, everything was going fine. So it was an emergency. And so for my second, I really was really wanting to go for that VBAC. And I ended up changing care because my OB was like, I don't think you should. Like, I don't think you're a good candidate. And I was like, no, I can do this. Like, okay. I can do this. So I switched to like a midwife program who they were absolutely amazing and so supportive. I ended up not being successful with it and again, pushed for 4 hours and was not successful, but went in for another C-section, which I knew was possible and actually ended up coming out after that. One of the bones just comes down and my baby's head can't get through. So 1% of like odd pelvic shapes.
Okay.
So that was just at least a nice like, at least I knew there was a reason behind it.
Right, but right.
My thing was like with my OB, I had said to her, I said, you know, nothing about my journey through infertility and pregnancies has been normal. Everything has been through science and needles and everything has been so planned. I said, I want this opportunity to try and have a natural pregnancy because I don't want to be told, no, you need to schedule your,
I get it.
I just wanted something to be natural.
I get it. Yeah.
And I tried and they let me try. And that's all I was like when I changed, when I changed practices, they let me try. Right. And that's all I could ask for. But you, there's so many things that you can't be in control of with IVF and infertility. And like, there was just like a few things that, you know, you just,
you want to like hold on to.
Yeah. You want to just try it or you want to, you know, be able to say you did it. And yeah, that's, yeah, but I think that was the hardest part when it came down to like and giving birth is I wanted that normalcy of not being going through IVF clinic
or someone telling you like you said like it's going to happen this way on this date at this time and you need this injection, you know.
Yeah. I was like that. My body couldn't my body couldn't do, you know, I didn't have the eggs and I didn't have this, but my body has done a pretty darn good job, you know, getting pregnant.
Right.
Carrying a baby, everything else has been so beautiful. So I look back at that and I'm like, okay, like everything turned out how it was supposed to. And
yes,
so many messages from women with POI who are, or even just women that are, you know, possibly having to go the donor route. And
absolutely.
And they want advice. And again, I always say therapist, amazing first step.
Okay. Yeah. That's good advice.
You'll learn so much about yourself or how you're actually feeling. And then I say, you know, it doesn't make sense right now, but looking back, I wouldn't change my diagnosis for anything. My kids, like I couldn't imagine having any other children than them. And they are literally so perfect. They are part my husband, part my donor. And the things that I know they got from their donor, I absolutely love. Like my daughter, she'll do things and I'm like, I know that that's from her and I just love that about her.
You guys are still really tight with them?
Yes. And I don't know. It's, I think a lot of people worry about having this connection or having, and I said, once you are pregnant with that baby, and this is from my experience, some people don't feel that way, but I also think that in order to move forward with donor, figuring out it, like, if you know how you feel about it, and if you're not,
it's not for everyone, of course, but
if you're not 100% about it, don't go through with it just yet. You know, sit on it, talk to somebody.
Yeah.
But looking back, like I would take being diagnosed with POI a million times for the children that I have, because I wouldn't trade them for, you know, anything. Everything lined up and went exactly how it was
supposed
to. And I'm just so grateful that donor eggs and our donor, like.
Right. Absolutely. So before we wrap, Do you have plans, you and your husband, to talk to the kids about being donor conceived, and no judgment either way, like whatever? I don't know if you know, but I wrote some children's books about IVF, you know, about how my son was born through IVF. And I'm a big proponent of just normalizing the situation, yeah, you know, getting rid of all the stigmas, and kind of my theory, and this doesn't have to be everyone's or yours or anyone, you know, whatever, but it's like, talk early and talk often. Like, my son knows, he's known since day one that he was an IVF baby. My daughter isn't. So they came into the world two different ways. But I've always felt like it's important for me, at least, and our family, to just be like, yeah, that's how it happened. It's not weird, you know, whatever. So I'm just curious, yeah, what's your plan and what's your take on all that?
Yeah. So one of the things we had to do before actually starting donor IVF was we had to have a couple of therapy sessions. We had to do therapy through our clinic, my husband and I, her husband and her. And then we had one together to talk about, you know, what is the plan? And it's originally my husband was like, had this mindset of like, oh, we don't tell them. And I'm like, and I remember saying to him, like, I'm not going through this if you're going to be closed-minded on what you think, you know, should happen with, you know, our children finding out. It's 20 at this time, 2022. Like, there is no hiding, you know, anything. And so we had a therapy session, and it was after that therapy session where he was like, okay, like, I agree. Because she talked about she gave all these amazing points on the statistics behind when, and, you know, all that, when you should tell them, if you should tell them. And after that therapy session, he's like, okay, you know, like, I think it's important. You know, she said always before, like she said, before 10 is the best time, like all that kind of stuff. And so thankfully he came around, because for me, it was super important that they,
yeah,
fell right off.
I would have been the same exact way as you.
Yes. My children, they need to trust that, you know, what we're telling them and how we went through this and how we did this, like, it was all out of love. And I don't want them to find out one day and, you know, resent, even though there's nothing, you know, there's nothing bad about how it happened. You know what I mean? It's just one of those things. And I'm also not embarrassed about it. Mm-hmm. For me, there's no embarrassment. I talk openly about using donor eggs, and I just want them to feel that way. So we had to sit down with, again, our donor, her husband, mm-hmm, and we just came up with a plan. They said to us, it's all on you. You let us know when, because I've planned from the beginning, you know, we're going to talk about it right off the bat. We have books. That's what we read at night. And
yeah,
again, she's 2.5. She has no idea, but at least if it's there and we're talking about it. And the plan is, you know, once she actually understands it, her children are a little bit older. So she said, I want you to tell them first, and then we will explain it to ours.
Yeah.
And their family is not like, they have like half siblings and stuff, that all four aren't from the same parents. So for them, they're like, this is
blended family. Yeah.
This is normal.
It's a thoroughly modern family. I love it.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So our plan is just always be open with them, and they are on the same page. They said they're waiting for us, and then once we give the go ahead that, like, she understands what's going on, then they will all know. And hopefully, you know, I know that they're all just gonna love it, but that's kind of the plan with it right now.
Thank you guys so much for listening. Thanks again to Kyla Burke. You guys can follow her on IG at Kyla Burke for fitness stuff, infertility stuff, mom stuff, all the things. She's just really real, and you feel like you've known her forever. Also, Fertility Rally Live is happening November 14th. Even if you can't come live, you have 30 days to watch all of our amazing talks, including the keynote by Sarah Herron. We have tons of giveaways, lots of books, lots of fertility products from some of our favorite brand partners. So definitely come and check it out. We also have a happy hour at the end on Zoom. Get together so we can all gather live again and talk about everything we just watched. So for more info on that, on the Work of Art book series, and on Fertility Rally membership, go to my Instagram at InfraLifeStories or Fertility Rally's Instagram, which is at Fertility Rally. Thank you guys so much. Thanks again to Kyla. And thank you, as always, for listening. I'll talk to you guys next time.
Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.5 billion back to our customer owners over the last 9 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.